All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, February 8th. Coming up this hour, money to punish, never money to help. The legislature's Republican majority has spent more than a decade starving state government through budget austerity, an intentional tactic to prove government doesn't work well. Now that it's causing a huge backlog for people seeking professional licenses, Republicans have a chance to use allocated money to help the situation. Instead, they're spending your money to audit the program, which will only make the backlog worse. We'll talk more about that later this hour. Also, in our usual Civic Media homeroom segment near the end of the show, Todd Alba will join us. His 8 to 11 a.m. show is heard on many of these fine Civic Media radio stations. If you'd like to reach the show, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Would love to get your thoughts on the State of the Union address, on the Republican response to it, on what you might expect from President Biden's trip to Wisconsin today when he visits a union training center in the Madison area. Or our question of the week is also about Valentine's Day next week. It being on a Tuesday, we thought we'd get ready for this coming romantical weekend and ask about your uniquely Wisconsin love story, maybe a place where you met or popped the question or tied the knot or visited, anything that talks about, life with your Valentine here in the Badger State. We'd love to hear all about it. In Milwaukee, they're grieving the death of a police officer who was killed while chasing down a robbery suspect and who was shot in an exchange of gunfire early Tuesday. The suspect also died from a gunshot wound. Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman said the suspect ignored officers' commands and fled on foot after they arrived at the robbery scene about 1 a.m. yesterday on the south side of Milwaukee. One officer caught up with the suspect. There was a struggle, and both men fired their weapons. The wounded officer, 37-year-old Peter Jerving, died at a hospital. He had had 4 years of experience with the Milwaukee PD. The suspect, 19-year-old Terrell Thompson, died at the scene. And I had a list of police fatalities in Milwaukee. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me now. But again, it's always just so shocking and unfair and unfortunate when this happens to a law enforcement officer. These are troubling times for law enforcement and also for the communities where that law enforcement officers serve in and are sworn to protect. We live in an era where guns have proliferated to an obscene degree, which has contributed to crime in large part because of lax gun safety laws in this country. And law enforcement has been caught up in wave after wave of incidents where a deadly force was used against unarmed people. It was even something mentioned in President Biden's State of the Union address last night about seeking greater police accountability and making sure that law enforcement can be properly trained and then properly respected, but that also the communities themselves need to come together and do more. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson made that clear yesterday in talking about the officer's death and noting again the prevalence of guns. Cavalier Johnson, the mayor, said he was angry and frustrated, said the entire community must play an active role to combat gun violence. He said the men and women of the Milwaukee Police Department, it's not just them. It's up to all of this, all of us. Enough of this. Enough of this. There's no excuse for this. This officer should not be dead right now. And again, we can either continue to, point fingers, play politics, accept the status quo, or we can say, what is the next logical step in this? And whether we're talking about, gun availability, or, police response or community response to preventing, bad apples from becoming criminals in the first place. It's something that's going to take everybody's contribution is going to be important, is going to mean something if we're going to stop having stories like this, from officers being shot to the victims of, you know, police deaths, like the parents of Tyree Nichols, who were in the crowd at the State of the Union speech last night. All of these things have to end at some point, and we can't just hope that they go away on their own. It's going to take a community response and taking seriously the leaders who want to help, and to stop coddling the elected officials who have no interest in helping, who like to talk tough, but who either do nothing or whose votes only make an already bad situation worse. Time for sports now at 7:12 on a Wednesday morning. 10th-ranked Marquette went to 21st-ranked UConn last night and lost 87-72. That drops the Golden Eagles out of first place in the Big East, but they should have an easier time of it on Saturday when they travel to Washington, D.C. to take on Georgetown, which is in last place in the Big East, something you never thought you'd hear about Georgetown in all those years of their dominance in Big East basketball for all those years. The Badger men's basketball team plays tonight at Penn State. They're at Nebraska on Saturday. And the Milwaukee Bucks are taking an 8-game winning streak into Los Angeles, where they will play the LA Lakers tomorrow night. And then they will play again in LA Friday night against the Clippers before coming home Tuesday, Valentine's Day, to take on the Boston Celtics. More headlines coming up, your phone calls and more for Up North News Radio on a Wednesday.
No sé qué pasó, otro amor que de repente fracasó. En mi cuarto está lloviendo.
So this was a Grammy winning song of the year from Bad Bunny. And you're going to say, oh, here goes Pat the old man talking about Bad Bunny and mocking some of the other folks at the Grammys. And I got to say, in the past 24 hours or so, since we started talking about the Grammys and listening to some of the winning tunes, and I'm still listening to that Grammys channel on my car radio, I've had a bit of a turnaround. And I have to say, it started at the very beginning of the award show with Bad Bunny having the opening number. And again, I'd only heard a snippet or two. And of course, you know, being a grouchy old man, I was just like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like this. And I'd turn it away. Well, you can't turn away when it's right there on TV. By the end of the song, I'm pretty much a Bad Bunny fan. I'm not going to lie. And so I'm going to be busy downloading some tunes this week and trying to give a fair shake to more of the Grammy award-winning artists, like the one you just heard there. So how do you like the yesterday, Aaron? It was Primus, learning all about that band from 1990. Now Bad Bunny. Do you feel like you're watching the musical evolution of a fossil?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. I wouldn't say fossil, but with Bad Bunny, I think this is probably the first time I've knowingly heard Bad Bunny. But I don't know. Seems like something I should definitely give another shot to. I feel like I've had the same experience a lot of the time, where not listening to music that is current and only listening to older stuff, and then finding myself pleasantly surprised when I like newer things. And I like that experience of hearing something new and being like, wow, maybe an old dog can learn new tricks.
It's catchy. There's some catchy stuff there. Brandi Carlile is another example where, again, she's somebody I would not normally hear from a guy who is, you know, used to listening to yacht rock, for lack of a better term. And yet, whenever I do hear her, I think I want to hear more of that. And, you know, the same goes for plenty of other artists. And it's a good reminder that sometimes you actually have to reset yourself and open up yourself to the possibilities that are out there. So there you have it. We are broadening the musical horizons of Up North News Radio, as best we can over here. Tomorrow on the program, Joe Zepecki, and also Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who I believe is bringing on Dr. Pat McBride. And we've talked about him a few times, a mentor to Dr. Lyerly. He wrote the book, The Luckiest Boy in the World. And it is such an amazing autobiography of growing up in Milwaukee, being a ball boy, the first ball boy for the Milwaukee Brewers, growing up in a dysfunctional home with a couple of alcoholic parents, but then going on to med school and, you know, almost washing out of that. So, I mean, he's just been extremely inspirational to so many people. And I believe he's going to be joining Dr. Lyerly tomorrow. So we're going to look forward to hearing more about that. Over at upnorthnewswi.com, where, you know, we have a team posting stories throughout the day and also on our social media sites, newly posted there. This headline, millions of Americans could lose Medicaid coverage later this year when the COVID-19 emergency ends. Here's what you need to know. The Biden administration announced recently the U.S. will no longer be in a COVID-19 emergency as of May 11th. Now, a lot of folks think, oh, well, that means there's no chance that they're going to bring back restrictions, shutdowns, safeguards, face mask rules, blah, blah, blah. No. What it really means is an estimated 5 to 14 million Americans could lose access to health insurance via Medicaid. When the pandemic hit, there were a whole lot of folks that suddenly found themselves out of work, temporarily or permanently. A whole lot of folks who didn't have health insurance or didn't have adequate health insurance, and the emergency made it easier for Americans to access the federal government's health insurance program for lower-income folks, Medicaid. It's something that is even less accessible in Wisconsin, as Wisconsin is one of only 12 states that has not yet strengthened its Medicaid program, known here as Badger Care, by accepting federal funds as part of the Affordable Care Act. This is quite literally still a Republican temper tantrum from when the Affordable Care Act passed a dozen years ago, when it included the extra funding for states to expand Medicaid. Republicans at the time used the flimsy excuse of, well, we're not going to take that money because it might be taken away and that would leave people stranded. When the only people threatening to take that money away are fellow Republicans. So there is no good reason. Wisconsin has spent literally billions of dollars more than it needed to provide health insurance coverage or otherwise backfill budgets as a result of not taking the Medicaid expansion. And there will be around the country now with this COVID-19 emergency ending, meaning that more Americans, including some in Wisconsin, will have to pay more for health insurance coverage. They'll have to start paying more for certain things such as at-home rapid tests. You know, you get a couple free, but if you need more beyond that, you would have to pay for it. And on it goes. So over at upnorthnewswi.com, we have an explanation of what all is really happening when the COVID-19 emergency ends. Now, the president did mention this in the State of the Union address. With the restrictions soon to be lifted, you know, the White House and lawmakers from both parties had more people in the chamber for the State of the Union address than in past years. The president reminded folks of, you know, the stakes of lifting the emergency and asked that Congress make sure that Americans do not feel an exorbitant amount of pain once that emergency is lifted. Many a time, the president said the words, finish the job, talking about ways that the economy can continue to be helped, ways the nation could continue to be united. In all, it was a 73-minute speech where he portrayed a nation that is dramatically improved from the one he took charge of 2 years ago, which was reeling. The economy was still feeling the effects of the pandemic. It was crippled. It was pandemic weary. The democracy was literally under attack. And yet, as he talked about those economic comebacks, about the things that Congress did to help out, as he talked about ways that Congress reclaimed a free democracy from a violent attack, it was so noteworthy that those were the kinds of things Republicans couldn't stand and applaud for. We are very used to seeing only one side of a chamber stand up, sit down, as somebody from their party in elective office talks about their proposals. That's fine. But there have always been certain, you know, universal concepts that everybody could get behind. But Republicans couldn't get behind President Biden's remarks about continuing to protect democracy from threats, which is not the world's biggest surprise, given that their own caucus is now filled with some people who either support those threats or were a participant in them. Derek Van Orden, for example, being on the Capitol grounds on January 6, 2021. I didn't see him last night, so I couldn't say that he is one of those who did not stand and applaud about the need to continue to strengthen and protect democracy, but I have a pretty good idea whether he stood and applauded or not. Another thing that stood out for me that Republicans wouldn't applaud, and this is a big change, and President Biden acknowledged that he was not really schooled on this topic until he became president, and that's the topic of non-compete clauses. I think we've all heard of them, and maybe some of us have been part of a non-compete clause in our jobs, but the use of them has proliferated into so many areas where they frankly just don't belong. And here's what I mean. A non-compete clause is great if you're talking about somebody who's going to have access to, you know, trade secrets, to inside information. And you want to make sure that they can't just, you know, wander across the street or across town to a competitor, take those secrets with them, and then provide that competitor with an unfair advantage. There is a place for non-compete clauses in the country. But again, they're part of everything now. And President Biden mentioned that. He said he did not recognize that this stretches all the way to, you know, burger joints and cashiers who are just taking orders at a restaurant. And if their employment agreement includes a non-compete, which they are hardly in a position to take issue with when they're, you know, looking for a job and being offered a job, then they lose access to one of the easier ways for them to get paid employment somewhere. And again, what trade secrets does a cashier have at a fast food restaurant? They don't. They know a little bit about how the place works, hardly a trade secret. And so the Biden administration is looking to crack down on the use non-compete agreements so that it does not cripple the public from being able to take a job with a better wage or with better conditions. And you know, that is a huge plus for workers in the country, especially in places where, you know, there are jobs may be plentiful, but you may not have the skills training for a certain job. And the one you may have the skills for, now you're subjected to a non-compete clause. And, you know, there's something just not right about that. I mentioned that the president is going to be traveling to Wisconsin. If you missed it earlier, we now know where he's going to be coming to DeForest near Madison to work at a job training center run by one of the unions. It's the Laborers Union, specifically the Laborers International Union of North America, where the president will come and talk about manufacturing jobs. He noted in his speech that since he took office in 2021, the nation has created 800,000 good-paying manufacturing jobs. He will meet with workers and apprentices who are going to be doing jobs that were created by several pieces of legislation that were passed in the last Congress before Republicans took over the House. This is one of a couple of stops that he's making. He's also going to visit Tampa, Florida. Of course, in Florida, he's going to talk about Social Security and Medicare. And then there will be cabinet officers across the country who are taking to at least 20 different states this week to talk about some of the various themes in the State of the Union address. All right, when we come back, Republicans in the legislature have a chance to help reduce a professional license backlog, but they've decided instead that they would rather make the problem worse. We'll explain on the other side of this. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I spent years just trying to find you so I could finally let you know. It was your son's heart that saved me and a life you gave us both.
Song of the Year, Just Like That, from Bonnie Raitt. She was surprised to win the Grammy for it. I was not aware of the song, was not aware until I started, you know, listening to the song and looking at the lyrics, that it's about organ donation and a woman meeting a young man who received her son's heart after his passing. Just a very touching song by Bonnie Raitt. Just Like That, again, is the name of it. Here on Up North News Radio, we're going to cover a couple of topics here from the legislature. We're going to talk about professional licensing, and then we're going to talk about co-pays for health insurance with a couple of guests here. But first, I wanted to pass along that folks have been aware for quite some time now that the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services has been having terrible problems with delays in processing license requests. And this is starting to affect more and more people. And it's an agency, like many others, that has been short-staffed and facing tight budgets since the Scott Walker years. And yet, things were starting to turn around. Matthew DeFore talked about this in a story at Wisconsin Watch about how the rate of returns for the public picked up after Governor Evers used federal funding to increase the agency's call center staff from 6 to 26. And again, there is funding available to continue to help hire call center workers and improve performance. But instead, Republicans running the Legislative Audit Committee have decided not to spend that money, including a $47 million surplus from license fees, and instead has authorized an audit to look into the past delays at that Department of Safety and Professional Services, which is going to make the backlog worse because now the workers there are going to be taking time to comply with the audit as well. And so there is a way for funding to be used in a good way to serve, but instead it's being used to punish when they already know what the problem was. It's the budget austerity that we have had to endure for 12 years in the state in the name of somehow proving government doesn't work. And instead of engaging in service, we're engaging in an audit that will tell us what we already know. And the backlog is not going to get any better because of this Republican action from yesterday. Now I want to turn to a bipartisan matter in the Wisconsin legislature. There was a press conference that was held on a bill called All Copays Count, something that would ensure Wisconsin patients can continue to access their prescription medications, to help make sure that any copay assistance that people get can continue to go toward their cost-sharing requirements, something that insurance companies don't want to have happen. And I have several guests with me here. They include Rob Gunderman from the Wisconsin All Copays Count Coalition. We also have Sarah Solly, a government relations director for the American Cancer Society Action Network of Wisconsin. And we also have, did she drop off? We had somebody, Annette Houston was with us earlier. Looks like she's not on the call here, but we're going to welcome in Rob and Sarah. Rob, good morning to you. Sarah, hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Okay, let's take a step back here. I gave a bit of an introduction, but let's frame it in the way that it happens with, you know, with regular folks. Who tell us about the copay assistance that they can get. Where does that come from? And then we'll talk about what the health insurance companies have to do with it or what they want to do with it. But Rob, let's start with what is this copay assistance?
So when you have some medications, frequently they will go to the manufacturer of that medication and apply for copay assistance, which is basically it's a manufacturer's card you get. It's like a little credit card, and you use that to pay for your medications. The problem we run into is that runs out, and then when I'm getting the calls is towards the end of the year when the person's manufacturer's assistance has run out. They go to pay for the medications, and then they find out they're paying list price and that their deductible hasn't been filled. That's the crux of it.
And it's I guess I've seen in some news stories, the word that you didn't use, but I hear others use is it's kind of like a coupon, like the drug companies say, you know, here's a coupon, a discount off so much of it. But health insurance companies are they not wanting to accept it, or are they refusing to accept these coupons right now?
What they're doing is they're taking the coupon, but they're not applying it towards the patient's deductible. So they're really double dipping. They're getting paid up front, this one, and then late in the year when that patient goes and their assistance is run out, they're then paying again because they're having to fill that deductible. None of the manufacturer's assistance went towards their deductible.
That's a little unbelievable, Sarah. But you know, as you and I and others with the American Cancer Society have discussed before, this is not the first time that we've had to deal with health insurance companies and, you know, paying for the things that premiums go toward. Is this a frequent problem? Is it a growing problem, Sarah? What's the situation like for the people around you?
Well, so, you know, obviously we are an advocacy organization with patients in mind, and this has a direct impact on patients in a very negative way. You know, we are in the process of meeting a lot of folks that benefit from copay assistance programs, but don't see the benefit through their insurance company, as Rob said. You know, 16 other states have passed this, and Wisconsin is trying to join those 16 other states. We just want this money to work in the way that is intended, right? That the patient actually benefits rather than the insurance company benefiting.
I guess I should say, Rob, and then I'm going to turn to Annette, but to when people say, well, why would that be the case? Again, from what I'm reading, the health insurance industry response is, well, they may be using these coupons for these drugs, but those may not be the right drugs. And as a result, because of the coupons, they're using very expensive drugs rather than using alternatives. What's your response to that?
That's just not true. The vast majority of these cases, there is not a generic alternative. There's only the brand name for those cases. So that just doesn't hold water.
Annette Houston's with us now, a patient advocate who is part of news conference at the Capitol to talk about the Wisconsin All Copays Count Coalition. It is nice to have you here, Annette. Can you tell me a bit about the extent of this problem in terms of the patients that you advocate for? Are you with us, Annette? Oh, I thought we had her here, but she appears to be having some computer issues. So let me ask this then, Rob. This was a bipartisan news conference, Republican and Democratic members of the Senate and Assembly. But is this the first time the bill's come up, or has it come up in the past, and did it not go through or not get enough votes? What's been the story on this in the legislature?
So it came up last session, and the bill didn't get a hearing just before the legislature went out of session. So we just, the clock ran out last time. That was the issue.
Okay. And Sarah, as you talk to legislators, we did talk about what the health industry talking point seems to be. What are your conversations like either with legislators, staffers, you know, other folks under the dome?
Sure. So prior to yesterday, we were just sort of educating on this bill, talking about this issue. The response has been sort of like yours, Pat, you know, somewhat unbelievable. You know, lawmakers, as we talk with them about this, don't quite understand why this wouldn't apply to the patient's maximum out of pocket. You know, there's certainly a lot of questions and curiosity about, you know, solving this problem and interest in solving this problem. I think, you know, now after the press conference that the bill is out there, we're seeing the insurance industry come out with their sort of arguments against that. So our conversations with lawmakers will then, you know, we'll add sort of the counter to that. Some of the claims that they're making are not true. In the 16 other states that we've seen this, you know, premiums are not rising because of this. They're rising, you know, at the same rate as other states that have even not done this. So there's no way to directly say that this is causing, you know, the problems that the insurance industry is claiming.
If you don't mind a little inside baseball here, I want to talk briefly about when you talked about educating lawmakers as somebody who's been in that position as a state senator. It really was one of the most enjoyable aspects of the job, was learning something new, understanding that it is not necessarily an instantly Democratic or Republican position to take on it, and that people can actually come together and work on an issue. And Sarah, you and I both know, and Rob, you as well, how frustrating things can be in the Capitol. But is this one of the rare instances where you walk out of offices from both parties and feel like, you know, we actually had a moment of positivity there and advancing an issue?
Pat, I would say so, right? I mean, as Rob mentioned, and you mentioned at the top of your show, this is a bipartisan effort, right? I mean, there is lawmakers from both sides in both houses on this bill. You know, there is a lot of curiosity in my meetings that I haven't seen in quite some time. You know, lots of questions asked about this, you know, we take it very seriously that it's kind of our role to educate. You know, the lawmakers deal with so many issues, and, you know, to come in there and to be able to talk to lawmakers on both sides of the aisle and have a positive response and a real genuine, you know, sort of hope to change and fix this on behalf of patients, which is sort of, you know, the main reason we would want to do this.
All right. And Rob, I want to talk more about the coalition because, again, the news conference was put on by the All Copays Count Coalition. Who makes that up? Who are all the various groups, people and whatnot that are a part of this effort?
Sure. I think 38 groups now in that wow. coalition, state and national. Sarah's ACS CAN. It's largely the health organizations that have joined patient focus groups. Anyone who's representing a patient to the situation is supporting this coalition.
I think my computer audio is working, is it?
Yes, it is, Annette. Annette Houston, patient advocate. Good morning. Thank you again for joining us here. How are you?
Fine now. I'm sorry that the computer's not working. I just wanted to say that there are over 1 million people in the U.S. with MS, over 25,000 in our state, and that a big problem is that only 40% of MS patients can take the drugs because of their cost. And this includes 70,000 veterans in the United States.
That's amazing. And so speaking from that MS perspective, I mean, can you give me just a quick example of just how expensive this could be for, you know, for any typical MS patient?
Yes. For me, my biologic, which means that this is an MS drug that cannot ever be a generic because it's grown from living cells. My cost is $152,292, and my copay only pays for $18,000, leaving me with $134,200 a year to come up with. And my husband's company has a special copay program that helps me with that, but most people do not have that. And in my case, my copay program could decide tomorrow it's not covering it. And like 40% of other MS patients, I would not be on my drug.
Just unreal, Annette. Rob, very quickly, if folks hear this and they want to, should they just reach out to their legislator, or do you want them to take any particular action?
If they can reach out to the legislature and ask them to support the all copays count legislation, that would really help.
I appreciate so much your time to do this on short notice and come talk about it. Annette Houston, Rob Gunderman, Sarah Solly, so great to talk to you all. Thank you for educating our audience on it, and we wish you all the best.
Thanks.
All right. We'll take one more break, and then we will be joined by Todd Alba right after this break on Up North News Radio. Well, if it's Wednesday, it's time for your crossover special here in the Civic Media Homeroom, where we welcome in Todd Alba, and then he's usually crazy enough to welcome me in for the first few minutes of his show coming up at the top of the hour here on many of these Civic Media radio stations. Mr. Alba, how are you?
I am excellent, Pat. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, but you are so snazzy today. I mean, look at you, crisp white shirt and a nice tie, and I'm sitting here in fleece and flannel up north. What's the occasion?
It's kind of like, after Superman, not to say I'm Superman, but once Superman kind of like took that break of being Superman for a while, and the suit was still there, the Republican suit is always in the closet, ready to be broken out at any moment. It's a big presidential visit day here in Wisconsin, and Madison, DeForest, the suburb in particular. So we are going to be carrying that across the Civic Media Radio Network, and I'm going to be anchoring that along with our news director, Terry Bell. They're telling us around noon, but as you know, these presidential visits are always a little, soft in terms of time. And they do it for security reasons. They don't want people to know exactly when the President of the United States is going to appear where. So it may be closer to 1:30, 1:45-ish. We'll see.
We'll see. And I have to admit, now I set the bar low today. I think I set it a little too high yesterday, saying if there's any announcements, you know, we'll have them. But given that the president, you know, really couldn't lay out a legislative agenda because of, you know, the makeup of this new Congress, I would not think the bar would be set for any big news, maybe something related to the Infrastructure Act. But it's just as likely he's just going to come and deliver some boilerplate remarks about the manufacturing part of his speech and then move on to his next stop.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked about this last night. I thought we had a great panel, by the way. We had Joseph Pecky, a Democratic strategist. We also had Matt Flynn, of course, past Democratic Party chair for Wisconsin. We also had Bill McCosken, a longtime Republican, respected across the state, was former Secretary of Commerce under Governor Tommy Thompson. So we had a lot of back and forth. The point that I made or that I talked about with Bill McCosken last night, Joe Biden last night talked about Buy America, supply chains for China, getting them back to the United States, lots of deals, record jobs, non-college workers. I mean, these are things that Donald Trump would love to run on. I mean, places like where you or I are from in the western part of the state, the rural parts of the state, those are issues that resonate with voters, and I thought he nailed it.
And yet, I don't know what Bill had to say, but there was such an emphasis on, that Biden would, you know, muff up a word here or there, as somebody would who's A, you know, of his age, B, has overcome a speech impediment. But again, to look more at the surface of the theatrics, if you will, is kind of keeping in theme with what we saw shamefully from some members of the Republican side who wanted to turn this all into theater rather than the substance of the remarks.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not trying to give Bill's speech for it, but basically just you kind of threw it out there. Bill agreed that those were smart topics for Biden to run on, that they resonated with kind of that Republican swing voter, that independent, whoever she or he is yet in Wisconsin, that still will vote for both sides. But you're right. As far as I'm a guy who loves the theater. I mean, Bill didn't like the length of it. Joseph Pecky said we should just get rid of these things, just make him go back to writing. See, I'm a guy that loves the pomp and circumstance. I love the theater of it all. I thought it was, it was closer to Prime Minister's questions last night in the UK than it was a State of the Union address. I don't think it should be that disrespectful. But here's the great thing, Pat. I thought last night showed quintessential Joe Biden. I thought it showed his strengths. He get a little back and forth. He wasn't going to be taken down. You're right. This is the thing that Republicans do that is just cruel. They go after his stumbling of words. This is a guy who was born with a major speech impediment, a stutter, and still, when he's not in public, still stutters. And he has to work every single time he's in public not to be stuttering. And I thought he knocked it out of the park last night in his oratory and the way that he handled that heckling.
And it really could be that he could say to some of those folks, after the speech is over, you know, at the end of the day, I can overcome my speech impediment. You are still going to be a jackass. And that's really what it came down to in some cases. Look, I'm all in favor, and I've said this for a long, long time. I'm all in favor of starting something more along the lines of Prime Minister's questions. I think we would do well with that kind of an instant back and forth in Congress instead of the same old canned speeches. But that's not what this was. And frankly, I agree with those who've said it's almost like somehow Democrats set up Republicans to do this, to look like jerks, because again, while that feeds red meat to a base, that base is not nearly enough to overcome, you know, the independents who look at that and go, what has happened to these people?
Well, again, I think it was so smart of Joe Biden to just bait him, and they took the bait on Social Security and Medicare. He said, you know, got some members, not all of them, but some members of your party over the Republican side want to get rid of this. And they went ballistic, and Marjorie Taylor Greene in her Cruella DeVille white outfit stood up and yelled, liar, liar. And Biden just raised the eyebrows. He goes, oh, what? No, you don't want to do it? Well, great. We found unanimity. I'll take all converts. So we're agreeing tonight that we're not going to sunset Medicare and Social Security. I was brilliant.
I and others compared it to Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope. And it was just, it is one for the ages when you look back on State of the Union speeches, that whoever thought to use that tactic to get them to go on the record publicly, like, okay, you don't want to do this. You're booing me for something that, you know, Ron Johnson and Rick Scott have both said they want to do. Okay, good. We got you. So that was a fine thing on his part. Let's turn to All Matters Todd Alba and the Todd Alba Show, especially since I'm going to be wandering down to Madison sometime really soon here.
What do we owe the honor?
Truthfully, it's about New Year's resolutions.
Oh.
One of my New Year's resolutions was to stop waiting for excuses to get together with old friends and to actually show some initiative. And nice. So I'm reaching out to a few folks, which leads to this next question, since one of them is Jeff Barrant. Do I need to set up a beer summit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm always down for a beer with Jeff or anybody else.
It's part of that Joe Biden. Let's all get together. You know,
Rush Limbaugh used to say, I'm just a harmless little fuzzball. You know, that's, I have no power.
So no, I'm going to see a couple of old college friends, old staffers, and really that's all it came down to, was saying, you know, I sit here in this room. It's a nice house. It's on a beautiful lake. It's a good setup to be able to do radio from my home. But, you know, my wife pushes me out the door every 3 days or so and says, go outside and play. You got to get some fresh air and, you know, go meet a friend. So I'm going to go do that. So I'm looking forward to doing that. But first, I'm going to show up on your show in just moments here on some of these fine stations. Todd Alba, who everybody else can hear from 8 to 11. And if he's not on your station, then go to civicmedia.us and subscribe to it as a podcast. Thank you very much, Todd. Talk to you again very soon.
Absolutely.
All right. You can follow me all day long, Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Earl Ingram is next in Waukesha, Oshkosh and Green Bay, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba around all the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.